Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. There's a man sitting with me here at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Nashville, Tennessee, who is one of my personal heroes in that war for the free world. He has been for 18 years working in the front lines of the struggle to save persecuted Christians around the world. He was involved in and ultimately came to run a terrific organization, Voices of the Martyrs. Before that, he served in the uniform of the United States Marine Corps for a good number of years, rising to the rank of a colonel in the Marines. His name is Jim Dow, and he is one great American. And it's a pleasure to have him here with us in person, not just at the other end of a phone line. Jim, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to talk with us.
Thank you for allowing me to be with you and share with you.
Well, share with you is what I want you to do. Share with all of our listeners some of your insights into what we are confronting at the moment in terms of a world that, if I'm not mistaken, and it's not just a perception, I think it's Open Doors, another of our friends in this Save the Persecuted Christians coalition, have pointed out is actually getting worse in terms of the number of countries that are persecuting Christians, the numbers of Christians that are being oppressed by their estimate at something like 215 million that are facing heavy persecution, not just your garden variety oppression, but actual heavy persecution. Talk, if you would, from the perspective of a man who's been in the trenches on this, literally and figuratively, for a long time, about whether that's right, that it's getting worse, and if so, Jim, why?
Well, I think it changes. Let's put it that way. It moves. I think it's getting worse in some areas, like northern Nigeria. It's just tremendous. North Korea has always been very difficult for any believers there. In some areas like India, it's getting very difficult, but it's difficult. Some people do get beat up, but it's more you can't work. They take away your jobs. They take away your livelihood. Children can't go to school. So things of that nature make it very difficult. And they're trying to change India into a non-Christian country where Christians can't
be
accepted.
They're trying to actually drive them out.
That's right.
The country.
Missionaries are not being allowed visas anymore, and so it's getting very difficult. So it is a changing situation. I think it is increasing, but I also think the believers in those areas are growing. Look at Iran. I think the church in Iran is growing greater than we've ever seen before. So
oppression seems to drive people even more powerfully.
That's right. To standing
stand
for the
by
Lord.
Their belief.
You're right.
What you've just said, Jim Dow, is so important because I think to the extent that Americans are aware of this at all, and too few of us, I think, are, though polls indicate that it's a larger number than I had expected, to be honest with you, but that it's not just happening in the Middle East. It's not just the Islamic State, for that matter, or other what I call Sharia supremacists that are engaged in this. It's truly a worldwide phenomenon. What is it about Christianity that is causing people who have as little in common with each other as, say, Kim Jong-un in North Korea and the, you know, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi of ISIS in Iraq or Syria, to find common cause in oppressing people of the Christian faith?
Well, they have a hard time accepting that Jesus Christ is alive and there to serve them. They have a hard time seeing how Christians deal with persecution through love, not through responding physically and attacking them back, but to show their love. A good example is in India, where I've known a number of evangelists, small little evangelists, go to a village and start sharing about the gospel. People will come out, some will listen, others will come out and beat them up. You ask them, what do you do after they beat you up? After I come to, I come pick myself up, get back on my bike, and go to the next village to share about Jesus Christ. And so the heart of a believer is so strong, and I think it affects governments. China
is a challenge to the regime.
Right.
Very
China's
direct.
Government is concerned of how the church is growing in China. It's even bigger than the Communist Party. So you see this growth. You see, they see something that is something they can't overcome. Mm-hmm. And it's just something that it's just great to see how the Lord is working throughout the world and how he touches people and their boldness to stand for the Lord no matter what they face.
Yeah. Jim Dow is our guest. He's long been associated with the wonderful organization Voices of the Martyrs. I'm very pleased to say he's now helping lead a coalition of which our organization, the Center for Security Policy, is proud to be a member, called the Save the Persecuted Christians Coalition and Campaign. And Jim, would you just talk a little bit about the idea behind this campaign as something that is, I think, very explicitly intended to complement the work of organizations like VOM and so many others that are part of the coalition?
Oh, yes. You know, as you said, I was at VOM for over 18 years. One of the things that I see in the Christian community, especially in the last 6 or 7 years, is the partnerships of people coming together to work together to help believers. And I see that's what we're doing with this organization, coming together with the Voice of Our Open Doors, other organizations that are helping the persecuted church and families, to stand with them and to come alongside and to be there to support them, to give them the tools they need to continue to do the work the Lord has for them.
Yeah. And one of the other pieces of this, which it seems to me is perhaps as important as any others, and starting with the one you've just mentioned, which is, of course, helping people learn about the work of folks who are actually in the field, and awful circumstances in many cases, doing courageously the support that you've just talked about. But there's another piece of this, which I think this coalition is uniquely configured to help with, and that is, as I understand it, to try to deal systemically with the problem of the persecutors.
Yes.
Not just symptomatically with the plight of those they persecute. And could you talk a little bit about what that requires and whether that's really needed at this moment, given what we just said about the conditions in the world?
Well, I think we always have to be mindful of the people that are persecuting the Christians. And I think, to be very honest with you, it's amazing to see the persecuted people praying for their persecutors. Richard Wurmbrand, who is the founder of the Voice of Martyrs, tortured for Christ. And this is a plug for the movie that's coming out.
Plug away. It's terrific. Tortured for Christ is the name of the movie.
Yeah, Tortured for Christ is the name of the movie.
To put it together.
And in part of that movie, you will see where he is severely tortured. And one of the guards who comes in to pull him out every time to torture him asks him, why do you continue to pray for? Who are you praying for? There's nothing helping you. And he looks up at him and he says, I'm praying for you. He wasn't praying for himself. He was praying for his torture. And that is what I see is the power of the persecuted church, praying for the torturer.
You know, I've had the privilege of seeing this film, Tortured for Christ, and I want to thank you, Jim, for your work behind it. Also, Steve Cleary, another fellow who's helping with the campaign. It's brilliantly done. So thank you for what you're doing with this coalition to save the persecuted Christians. Find out more about it at savethepersecutedchristians.org, folks. You can, in fact, get a free banner for your church to display outside, if they will, as part of the coalition. Join us, Jim Dow, his wife Peggy, and so many others who are now putting shoulder to the wheel in this way. It's inspiring and greatly appreciated, sir. Come back to us again very soon, if you would.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are in the exhibition hall at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Nashville, Tennessee's famous Gaylord Hotel. As I was on Eric Metaxas' show yesterday, and he said it's a terrarium for humans, and it does have that feeling, I have to say. It just goes on and on. But one of the humans who is not only in the terrarium with me, but sitting across the table, is a dear friend and greatly cherished colleague, Kelly Kohlberg. Kelly is a remarkable woman in many regards, a Harvard-trained practitioner of public policy, among other things, extremely conversant with and adept in the black arts of the social media. And I have had the privilege of working with her on a number of causes, and am particularly thrilled that she is one of the leading forces in the new coalition that we've been talking about here at the NRB meeting, the Save the Persecuted Christians Coalition. More information about it, as you know, folks, is at savethepersecutedchristians.org. Kelly Kohlberg, you are a woman of many parts, and we won't do justice to any of them here, but I wanted, first of all, just to say welcome and thank you for joining us, and invite you to talk a little bit about the coalition and the work you're doing with
it.
Thank
you so much, Frank. It's an honor to be here with you and so many people. Yes, I think what we've got is a growing sense of the not only injustice, but actual genocide of Christians, not only throughout the Middle East, but even in Africa and Asia, and also the seeding of the problem of attacks on free speech throughout Europe and America as well. And so with respect to religious liberty and also just human rights, this is not a political project. This is a human rights campaign. If ever there were a social justice warrior, they should be interested in SaveThePersecutedChristians.org.
Amen.
We're not talking about people's feelings being hurt. We're talking about rapes and torture and beheadings and crucifixions. And if this doesn't get our attention as a nation, I don't know what would.
You've studied these things closely, Kelly, in the popular culture and sociologically in our own society and I think elsewhere around the world. And I just wondered, social justice is such an interesting phenomenon, and it seems that it has a blind spot when it comes to Christians.
It does.
They are generally regarded, as best I can tell, as really the oppressors, not the victims of oppression, as a majority that should be demeaned, not lifted up or admired for its tolerance and its respect for human rights and so on. What's that about?
It's a very strange phenomenon, and I'm glad you mentioned it because we all should be aware. You know, honestly, I don't come from a particularly Christian family. We were quite a liberal and eventually broken family. And I came to faith in Christ at age 15 through a local church down the street and a passion play that they did with kids my age. And I had never seen such loving, caring, kind people in my life. It was like I was adopted into this huge family. And then for the decades since then, that has over and over again been the case for me and the missionary work that we've all been a part of, and on and on. And it really befuddled me to see this total reversal of the kind of press about the kindness of Christians. And then I realized this is, you know, one level it's kind of, you know, Christians would say spiritual warfare or just discouraging and so forth. But at another level, there's intentionality behind that as well. So, for example, in the case of persecution of Christians in the Middle East and even the loss of free speech in America, when there is, a terror event, a San Bernardino event or a Paris event or Brussels or the Boston Marathon bombing, we could go on and on.
New York.
Florida, I mean, it's Orlando. A hideous litany. Mm-hmm. And yet when people say, you know, I think that we need to do wise welcome, not open borders. We need to show discernment, which is actually a biblical perspective. It's you have Nehemiah building walls at one point around Jerusalem, as well as the embrace of a well-meaning foreigner like Ruth or Rahab. So the biblical teaching is not open borders and blanket amnesty. It's wise welcome. It's discernment.
And yet I think where you were going with that is Christians are vilified
if they say that. What I just
let
said.
Alone urge its practice as a national policy.
And what we've found out that is quite disturbing and really also animating, and I hope that our listeners understand this, is that groups like huge foundations like the Open Society Foundation, which is Soros.org, it's George Soros's sole funder of this foundation, one of the largest in the world, is funding.
They just picked up $18 billion, as I recall.
It's now a 20-some billion dollar foundation.
Staggering.
And they are funding hundreds of activist organizations that become community organizers, that create the Islamophobia movement, that blames and shames the very people telling the truth about the danger of Sharia supremacy, for example, of dangerous jihad. And so when someone says the truth, they are likely to be smeared or shamed. And it allows the evil...
Marginalized,
silenced. It's a chilling effect that's paid for by a man named George Soros. S-O-R-O-S. Every American needs to know who this is. And he has help from some other foundations, but he's sort of the lead dog on this. And if you'd like more information on this, please go to AmericanEvangelicals.com. And there's a short video and a letter that documents, this is not speculation and conspiracy theory. This is following the actual grants from the Open Society Foundation to hundreds of organizations, including, quote, rented ministers.
Wow.
Can't make this up. They use a false faith narrative to advance the Islamophobia concept and also the interfaith dialogue movement. Groups like Sojourners, Jim Wallis, are funded by the Open Society Foundation. Faith in Public Life, Faithful America. We welcome refugees. You know, we need to welcome legitimate refugees. But these projects are often used to really confuse and obfuscate and divide.
Yeah, the church especially. And, you know, as you're talking about that, of course, there are the myriad refugee resettlement organizations, many of which, I think 6 out of the 9, if I'm not mistaken, are tied in one way or another to a particular faith community. They're basically fundraising machines that are getting paid by the federal government to resettle people. And when they lobby on behalf of these refugee resettlement programs, it's not generally acknowledged that they're
hugely funded.
Have a conflict of interest about it.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that you mentioned the Soros piece. As it happens, I think you know, Kelly, I myself, among those who have been vilified in this fashion by WikiLeaks, we know that this was a direct product of George Soros's philanthropy, several hundred thousand dollars, I think.
Congratulations, Greg.
Well, it's a dubious distinction, as they say.
It's a badge of honor. It means you're effective as a truth teller.
I believe that's true, and I think that's true of all of us who have been attacked by the Southern Poverty Law Center and the various Islamist front groups and the Soros operation. Kelly Culbert, we have to leave it at that for the moment, but it's so great to see you
here,
and thank you for being part of this wonderful Save the Persecuted Christians Coalition and spreading the gospel,
it's a privilege,
through the various channels that you have, and for being such a great friend.
God bless you, Frank. Thanks so much. Keep up the good work. Bye-bye.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. A man that we have the privilege of talking with some regularity, but rarely in person, because he is relentlessly traveling the country, talking about his insights into the challenges we're facing to freedom, notably, but not exclusively, from Sharia supremacism. Is with us here at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Nashville, Tennessee. He is Philip Haney, a stakeholder, as they call him, in the Department of Homeland Security, having served from its inception until his retirement. During that period, in which he served with great distinction, he found himself at odds with successive administrations, I think it's fair to say, as they chose to ignore, and worse yet, enable some of the threats of which Phil Haney was all too cognizant and warning about. These experiences and the hardship that they entailed in terms of Phil and his family are documented brilliantly in his book, See Something, Say Nothing. And it's always a treat to have a chance to visit with him, especially here in the company of so many others who, as with me and many in this audience, are worried about persecuted Christians and trying to do something to save them. So, with that long introduction, Phil Haney, welcome. Good to have you back.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Well, Phil, you, of course, have had considerable experience, and I think it's important to attest to your deep knowledge of both the Quran and the Hadiths, the other foundational documents of Islam, which you mastered in the course of preparing to do your job in the Department of Homeland Security. Tell us a little bit about your background in that regard and how it has informed what you're doing today.
Thank you. Regarding the Quran and the Hadith, if you were to summarize the message of both in one or two words, it would be supremacy. It is a document describing the Islamic definition of sovereignty, the kind of government that we should live under. And there is your fundamental point of conflict. We have sovereignty as defined by the Constitution. These gifts, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness that we were endowed with, which really, when you think about it, the Constitution is a legal document that describes the sovereignty that we live under. Well, so is Sharia. It's another way of defining sovereignty from an Islamic point of view. And therein lies the great conflict. Which definition of sovereignty will prevail? And within the Islamic worldview, it is authorized, permitted, a wide spectrum of tactics to either persuade and or force individuals to submit to that form of sovereignty. And the West, in particular the United States, with our unique Constitution, is seen as the last stronghold against the goals of the global Islamic movement. And that is really the fundamental point of contact. Jihad, we hear a lot about, is a tactic to implement the global strategic goal of submitting to the sovereignty of Allah versus the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, and the articles in the Constitution that describe the rights that we've been endowed with. And if we look at it from that basic perspective, it brings the whole conflict into focus.
Sharp relief.
Yes,
it certainly does. And Phil, as you're talking, I'm interested in two things. One is the role that Sharia plays in Islam. It's my understanding that those who argue that there are lots of different kinds of Sharia and it's basically whatever you want it to be are dissembling. or simply ignorant of the truth. Is that your understanding of the nature of this program known as Islam, that Sharia is very, very institutionalized and established and not subject to various interpretations under the authorities of the faith, at the very least?
Sharia law is not an abstract concept that is open to interpretation by any particular individual. There's not a Burger King. We do it your way. Sharia law is an actual book, just like the Constitution is an actual document that you can physically hold in your hand and read. And the easiest way to make a comparison between Sharia and the Constitution is to literally look at them side by side.
And when you say an actual book, yes, to which are you referring?
Well, one is most familiar with in the English-speaking world is called The Reliance of the Traveler. It is the authorized, and I say that in the same way that the King James Bible is authorized, by all of the leading academics and institutions in the Islamic world, from Al-Azhar University in Cairo, which is the epicenter of the Sunni world. I don't know for certain that the Shia branch has actually endorsed it, but we also know by default that most of Sharia law is followed in both branches of Islam.
There are some points that for the outsiders, yes, may seem like fairly nuanced differences, but they're willing to kill each other over them.
Kind of like the states.
Yeah.
In even going back to the war between the states, they had 95% overlap, but that 5% was enough of
all
the difference to lead to conflict.
Yeah.
Yes.
Phil, one other piece of this. There was a group within the Sharia supremacist community that you followed very closely during your time at the Department of Homeland Security. In fact, some of the trouble that you got into with, as I understand it, Hillary Clinton's State Department was over this team called the Tablighi Jamaat and your efforts to make book on what they were about and what they were specifically trying to do in our own country. Very quickly, tell us the story of Tablighi Jamaat and how it actually is playing a very important and dangerous role in promoting Sharia supremacism in this country and elsewhere.
Tablighi Jamaat means the party or the group of the promoters. In the West, the closest approximation would be that they are the evangelists of the Islamic world. There are somewhere between 75 and 125 million members of Tablighi Jamaat. Outside of America, they're known as the Army of Darkness. And their cachet, their trademark, is they can blend in and associate or fellowship with virtually every other Sunni Muslim organization that exists in the world, from Boko Haram to Al-Shabaab to Hamas to the Wahhabis in Saudi Arabia. You name it, you'll find Tablighi Jamaat. They are like the couriers, if you will. They take messages, ideological messages, from one community to the other. They're like emissaries or couriers.
So if somebody says we shouldn't worry about them because they're not violent, what's your response to that, Phil Henney?
That's a false premise, because they are pro-Sharia and pro-Jihad. They are definitely involved, either directly or indirectly, with Jihad, violent form of Jihad. And, for example, Lashkar-e-Taiba, the group that was involved in the Mumbai massacre, and the Taliban, which we've all heard of, are fingers on the exact literal same hand. They're all under the umbrella of the Deobandi movement, which is a place in north central India called Deoband.
A fascinating tale, and so important, as was your work in trying to combat them, Phil Henney, at the Department of Homeland Security. I know that that work is unfinished, shall we say.
Yes.
I pray that the Trump administration is going to recognize it, and more generally, the Sharia supremacist phenomenon of which it's a leading vanguard, Phil Haney, thank you for all the help you're giving with the Save the Persecuted Christians campaign. Keep up the good work, my friend.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We are in a target-rich environment, is the way I think of it, here at the Exhibition Hall of the National Religious Broadcasters. Target, of course, not in the lethal sense, but in the chance to visit with extraordinarily impressive and interesting people who are involved in one form or another of the ministry of communicating with people in this country and a great many of them elsewhere about matters of faith, and in particular, the persecution of people who believe in Jesus Christ. One of whom has, I'm happy to say, just turned up right here at our booth in the exhibition hall. She is Michelle Nicole. She represents an organization on whose board she serves. It's called the Christian Boaters Association. And I trust that's not people who are just interested in going out and having a day sail, you know, with a cross somewhere on the boat. This right. is for a purpose. Michelle, you know, I know by training you're a medical practitioner. You are also, of course, very active in the lay ministry and have been for many years. But tell us what you can about this Christian Boaters Association and what it does.
Okay. Well, we actually got introduced to it many years ago. We were first retiring for the first time, and my husband was a boater at that point, and it was very important for him to stay within the Christian realm. Little did we know we were going to find this organization, and their main purpose was to go out across the waters to spread the gospel. So many, many years, we have people all over the world that have been doing that. We're also affiliated with large ministries like JARS and Wycliffe and all of them. So the boats that get provided could be from a little banana boat to reach a tribe to a large medical missionary boat that pulls into third world countries. As time has come on, we realize that the persecution has been getting worse and worse. So the boats are manned to travel, you know, whenever they have to try to save people, you know, whether it be Jew or Christian. You know, obviously we're a Christian organization, but we certainly do not just go in for one. Anti-Semitism is on the rise as well as the Christians being persecuted. So we are not out there to raise money. There is no fee to join Christian Boating Association. We are a prayer network. We are a network that provides whatever these ministries need. If there's an orphanage being built, our boats will go out with the surplus on it to build the orphanage. If there's a church being built, we will have the volunteers that go out, join forces, and get the materials. And so it's strictly a networking organization, unlike a lot of the others. We're not fundraisers in that sense.
No, and you're not looking for publicity either, as
Absolutely
I understand it.
Not.
These are people who are literally going into harm's way to save where they can or otherwise help those who are afflicted, which is one of the reasons why I was so anxious to talk with you. And again, our guest is Michelle Nicole. We are in the midst of a great effort, Michelle, to see what we can do to help organizations like yours, both with your ministry and with securing the both awareness and support of others who might be able to help you do it. So I know you're not looking for funding, but to the extent that people are interested in helping, I see that you have a website, www.christianboater.com,
yes.
And we are very hopeful that you and your team can become part of this coalition to save persecuted Christians. That I think at the moment is responding just as you are to
yes.
a intensifying problem in this area.
And if anybody is interested, they can actually use my email, which is cbajupiter @gmail.com, because our media is very limited. People are going to go out there looking for a massive Facebook page, massive online. We do not have that kind of presence.
But again, this is why we were anxious to talk, yes. Michelle, because you and your husband, Bill, are exemplary of what I have found so impressive in the community of people who are trying to help with what I call the symptoms of persecution around the world. And you're truly doing it around the world.
Absolutely.
Which underscores that point, that
yes.
This is a universal problem, not restricted to one country or region even. But what, as you know, we're trying to do to be helpful with this Save the Persecuted Christians Coalition is to see if we can bring not only awareness and attention and support to
right.
the good works of people like yourselves, but we can also do something else, which is to go at the problem systemically, specifically the fact that we have, at this point, very limited pressure being brought to bear on the persecutors to stop doing it. There are no costs, essentially. So the purpose of this coalition is to pull together as many of the folks who are in this space, including, you know, the Christian Voters Association, please God, to see if something different can be done, something that really augments and empowers you. Just give us an example, if you could, without getting into operational details, but I'm sure that you've got stories. As you know, so much of this turns on real people and real experiences, because moving folks to act or even to be concerned, oftentimes when it's just an abstraction, doesn't have the desired effect. Could you share an example of a rescue that your team has accomplished that really makes a difference in the lives of at least those immediately affected?
I would probably have to tell you that I could only compare it to when our troops were in Normandy and the larger ships were getting bombed and couldn't get close to them.
Dunkirk. Yeah.
Who were the people that came to save them. So, I mean, that was many people that just had a small boat. And a lot of times that's what's going on. It could be as small as a banana boat that's getting put into a very situation where you really can't even reach with a regular boat.
Right.
And as far, there have been so many. I don't know that I can zero in, because it could be one family. It could be 25 people. Mm. You know,
we're talking at a moment. I'm so glad you mentioned this, where the Academy Awards are about to happen. It's entirely possible that the film called The Darkest Hour
yes.
will be the prize winner of the yes. best film. Best actor for sure, I think. Dunkirk was also another film that just recently came out. And both of them tell this story of what people in small boats did to save, in that case,
exactly.
an army.
Exactly.
And it's the story that I know isn't told in either of these films, but as I understand it, is that took place. That was possible at Dunkirk because of a miracle.
Because of a miracle.
A miracle that many would ascribe to the fact that King George, as you may know, called upon his people to get down on their knees
and pray absolutely
that they would be able to effect this rescue of something like 300,000 men stranded on this beach, being bombed and strafed by the Germans until the weather closed in and they couldn't fly and the panzers stayed back, and the miracle was effected. This is a miracle that you're accomplishing every day now.
You know, they always say make things so large that only God can accomplish them. Well, isn't that the truth?
That was
we go nowhere without the prayer network, and that is really what we are. We have thousands that will pray for everybody that you see, you know, what you're looking at. They follow the news. They know what's going on, and then from there we get calls, we get whatever, where someone will say, we need help.
What a blessing.
And that's where it goes.
Michelle Nickel of Christian Boaters Association. Please go for a little entertainment at least to christianboaters.com.
Yes.
Thank you for what you do and for
this
joining us in this
Thank
coalition.
You.
We look
Thank
forward
you.
To talking with you and working with you.
Be blessed.
Stay well. Be blessed.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.